Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Healthy Gut Girl, Kitty Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I am coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And did you know that there is one of your largest lymph nodes just up from your small intestine, like not quite at your stomach? And that's what I learned today from our guest who I am so excited about that I bumped him up in front of four other guests, not because the four guests are boring, but because the momentum behind the topic that this guest talks about today is so hot. It's a subject that is really going off in the estrogen dominance support group on Facebook. And it's a subject that's really hot in general on social media. I'm seeing it pop up everywhere and also with my clients and myself. I've always been interested in lymphatic drainage. That is the topic that we are going to be talking about today with Dr. Perry Nicholson. And let me tell you, I know a lot of you know who he is. He's really famous, and I was super blessed to have him come on board. In fact, I sent him a message and said, all my people really need to hear from you, and will you come on my show? And he said, how's tomorrow? I was like, okay. It was awesome. I love when stuff happens like that. He is a chiropractic physician with primary focus on performance enhancement, corrective exercise, and metabolic fitness nutrition, and trained from the American College of Addictionology and Compulsive Disorders. He's an expert in myofascial, orthopedic, medical, and trigger point soft tissue therapy, a member of the board of directors and medical staff advisor for the AIMLA, American Institute of Medical Laser Application. Dr. Perry teaches healthcare professionals all over the world how to successfully use class 4 deep tissue laser therapy and alleviating pain. Director of clinical protocols and training for Light Cure Medical Lasers, specializing in myofascial laser treatments. But listen, it goes on and on. I mean, he's just got so many talents and gifts and specialties here, things that you don't often hear from chiropractors. My husband is a chiropractor, as you probably all know, and he does do some lymphatic work, and he does a lot of myofascial work and trigger point therapy and all of that. So this is not new to me, and I've been following Dr. Perry for quite some time, but I kind of like have fallen off the lymphatic drainage part. Like, the most I do is probably dry brushing and get in the sauna quite a bit. And then, of course, I go to Plate Fit, which is that power plate workout that I've told you guys about. And that vibrational plate is really good for lymphatic drainage also. Anyway, I want you to listen to this episode. You're going to love it. He is wonderful. It's a long one, but it's worth every single second. We were just in the flow. It was just so good. And then we will chat on the back end. So wait, where am I calling?
Yeah, I'm in New Jersey, just outside of New York City.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, we're living in a little bit of a sympathetic dominant stress response up here. And I think the whole planet is, honestly, but you know, we've always been living that way.
Apparently, yeah. Now it's just like concentrated for sure. And
yeah, it's just always action going on all the time. You know, go.
It's interesting because I kind of feel like these last few years, last 30 months, whatever it's been, it kind of has brought out some of the best in people and some of the worst in people. And it's interesting to see people who are thriving through this and how and why they're doing that. And just like, and not to say they're not struggling, but just like they're looking, they're fighting and they're making the best out of it. It's interesting to see.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It just is a testament to adaptability and resiliency of, you know, humans in general. But, you know, what your state was before what I call the zombie apocalypse hit, you know, like, The Walking Dead was a great preparation for this pandemic.
I know. I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. Definitely. It's some zombie action here for sure. Uh-huh. Well, Okay. I have an estrogen dominance support group on Facebook, and it's, you know, it's a good size. We have 22,000 members, and I've had it for 7 years along with my show, this show. And it's a very active group, as you can probably imagine, because so many women are suffering from estrogen dominance and all the things that fall under that umbrella. And one of the things we never talk about, never, 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 is lymph and the role lymph plays in hormone health. So let's just start there. I know it's broad, but let's start there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, absolutely. You know, I have a running joke that I say, if you remember the old classic Jerry Maguire movie with Tom Cruise, and she goes, you know, just stop. You had me at hello. I say that whenever the word lymph comes up, I'm like, you had me at lymph. I'm good. You don't have to say anymore. But yeah, well, lymph is not something that people talk about, honestly, in relationship to almost nothing except for two circumstances. One, they have lymphedema, which means that you'll kind of know it when you get it, but you know, you have an abnormally swollen part of your body, usually the legs or one of the legs. Sometimes it happens in the arms too, more so than the other one, right? And then you're like, okay, something's up with being able to drain. And you have two different, without going too deep into the rabbit hole, you have primary, which is, you know, you have a genetic component, you're born to it, the trigger goes and you got it. And a secondary one is something that happens from surgery or cancer or, you know, estrogen dominance, stuff like that can be a possibility. But if people don't have that, they don't really pay attention to it. Then the other one is cancer. So, you know, because they say, oh, you know, it can travel through the lymphatic system. I'm like, yes, it can, which first of all is a testament to just how that system goes everywhere. But you also have to remember that part of the lymphatic system's job is to kill cancer cells every day so you don't manifest cancer. So it's part of your significant part of your immune system. So for people that are actually wondering what that system is, its job is to get things out of your body that you don't want staying in there.
Okay.
And it's a big category, but if it ain't supposed to stay in there or be there, the lymphatic system's job is to kill it and then transfer it out. And it does transfer some hormones around too.
Where does it dump it?
Yeah, well, it dumps it in. Here's the cool thing. All the systems of the body work together. You know, you can't separate them. So they intermix like an ecosystem. And it dumps it into the venous system of the body, the circulatory system of the body. So lymphatics are part of your immune system, big part, but they're also a significant part of your circulatory / cardiovascular system. So they dump back into the veins of the body at a particular location, which is at the collarbone, at the base of the neck. Okay. And from there, it re-enters back into the heart and into the lungs, and then goes back into the arterial heart blood transport system. And then they can take it to all the other detox elimination organs of the body too. You know, its biggest one is kidney filtration and urination.
Okay.
That way. But interestingly enough, most of your organs in your body are there because they're devoted to waste management, detoxification of getting stuff out once you use them, or stuff that gets in that's too much of things you don't want there. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big one. So once you understand its vital role in those two systems, it's a must assess and a must look at system, because that's the linchpin, if you will, that most people are not looking at, right, especially when we get further into it. And I described to you just where it is and how much of a role it plays in everything. But it's just realizing that you have one, and then that, hey, that's really important. I might want to do something to try and take care of it on purpose. Yeah.
Right. And so when it dumps into the kidneys and filtration through the lungs, if you're having some detox organ stagnation, like at the liver and the kidneys, this is just going to cause some lymph backup.
Yeah, you always have both, right? You know, people say, is it the chicken or the egg? And I'm going to say, yeah, it's a little bit of both, right? Because, yeah, let's go through a couple of the detoxification systems. You know, a big one is the very act of breathing, exhaling. First of all, you exhale a ton of water, a ton of fluid. So that's a big way people get dehydrated, just from breathing, particularly if you overbreathe, which most people do. And you exhale your free radicals, oxidative stress, that way, carbon dioxide. Another one is the skin. That's a big one. So you detox through the skin. That's why you sweat, you go into saunas, you train, you exercise. And one of the top locations for most of the lymphatics in the body is the skin. So you can have a compromised lymphatic system, which means the skin will become compromised, but you can also get skin irritations and all sorts of inflammation. And, you know, there's so many different dermatological diagnoses that you can get, but in my world, they're always going to come down towards something to do with the lymphatic system and detoxification. And then of course you've got your liver. That's a big one. And I know your support groups knows about the value of the liver and hormones and estrogen and detoxification and the clearance pathways, pathway 1, 2, 3, and all that sort of stuff. And interestingly enough, the liver produces about 50% of the complete lymphatics for the entire body into the abdomen. So, and then you've of course got your liver issues. So they're backed up there, and then they'll bleed through the skin when they have liver issues as well. I don't mean literally bleed, but you know, the detoxification comes out. And then you have kidney issues where they're completely overloaded. And one, because people are dehydrated.
Wow. Right?
And the lymph is 90% water. So if you're dehydrated, you're already in a situation where you're going to struggle to function because of dehydration. That's why I tell people, if you're not hydrated, nothing I do is going to work.
Interesting. I mean, that's really, so how much water do you recommend though? Because you get all kinds of people saying different things.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a trick question because it depends on what you mean by water. So, you know, just because you drink water doesn't mean you're absorbing it. That's the first thing I need for people to understand. So, you know, water going in doesn't mean water absorption. And most of the time when you have inflammation in the body and you have toxicity around the cells, you have a cellular environment that's not conducive to transporting the water to the cell. And you're so acidic, you don't absorb the water. You just pee it right out. So they're like, I drink like 10 cups a day, or I'm going to the bathroom all the time. It's like, that's because you're not absorbing it. One, you could be low on salts and you know, minerals and electrolytes, which you most likely are, because most humans are.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they hear a word and then they automatically, bad word, like inflammation, bad, stress, bad, salt, bad. No, they're not.
Yeah.
You need them, because if you didn't have them, you'd be dead quick, fast, and in a hurry. It's the ratio and the dosages that matter. Right. And so here's the thing. If you can absorb water efficiently, then you don't need the 8 cups a day there, because you're going to get what you need. It goes right into the cell. Right. But I got most humans at one don't drink water, but they're also drinking other stuff instead of water. Right. So that's one of the fundamental questions that I ask everyone who sees me. Because you can't assume that the answer is going to be yes on basics and fundamentals. And I say, okay, are you drinking water? And then they say yes. And then I say, okay, how much and what type? For instance, if it's tap water or bottled water or what they call structured water, which means there's something in it. And then I say, okay, well, what else are you drinking? Well, about 6 cups of coffee and 2 Red Bulls and you know, all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, let's do the math on that one. You know what I mean? So, and yeah, that's important, because when you talk hormones, I always tell people, how do you think hormones get to the target cell they're trying to reach? Right about now, you should be saying blood flow. And then if you say blood flow, I'm going to say, well, then that is going to cycle back to the lymphatics. because that's going to influence blood flow.
Okay.
Right? You can have too little blood flow going to places, which happens most often because people are under excess stress and tensions, what they call sympathetic dominance or hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. So you alter your breathing, which automatically changes the ratio of carbon dioxide to oxygen in the body, and you become more acidic and you have more waste in the body, but you get tight. You get mm-hmm. tense, you get tight. Tight tissue doesn't accept fluid flow well of any type. So you slow it down. So it can't get to the target because you're too tight, right? Mm-hmm. So even if the hormones are there, I'm like, okay, well, that's good. But what if they can't get there? Right? So it's it's not only the quantity, it's the transport mechanism. It's like a supply chain crisis we have here. I got everything sitting off California that can't get to my grocery store. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's a really big thing. One of the reasons why you work with the liver when you have the estrogen dominance like that, right? So it's the transport mechanism that you have in there. And then when the lymph is working well, you're able to have an environment around the cell that allows things that come through the blood. Because if it comes through the blood, then it's got to go to the target and reach the cell or the receptor. Well, in order to do that, it's got to go through this fluid-filled environment called your interstitium to reach it. And if it's full of waste and toxins and excess protein and stuff like that, well, it's not gonna.
So, I just never thought about that protein aspect with lymph and like the junk.
Its primary job is to remove protein.
Wow.
From the interstitial space. You don't want protein in the interstitial space. That is not good. You're going to get inflammation.
Okay.
Period. Right. And so the lymphatics, its primary job is to remove most of the waste material around the cells that get there.
Okay.
From waste material from the outside world, you know, but also excesses of what you have inside your body. And also the metabolic processes of all the good stuff that happens in your body. So, you know, when you eat nutrients, hopefully they're good ones. That's good. You know, it has to get to your cell and your cell's like, okay, this is great. Thank you. And then I'm going to go through my metabolic energetic process, the Krebs cycle, the ATP, all that fun stuff to create energy because energy is life. Energy is I can repair the cells that have been damaged. And then what? I can also make new ones. That's kind of cool, right? Because it's not about just repairing. I got to have enough energy to make new ones. And if you're barely hanging on, taking care of the ones you got, you're not going to make many new ones. And if you do, they're not going to have a lot of longevity to them. Mm-hmm. So, but they use all those nutrients and then they make waste. It's called metabolic waste. Or your cells are pre-programmed to die, called autophagy. That happens a lot with fasting. That's mm-hmm. why it works so well. And then where's all that waste got to go is my next question.
And I would
you
think
better say lymphatics.
See, yeah. That's the thing I wouldn't have said. I was going to say like you, I think gut health, I think, okay, but why is that proteins? Why is that stuff getting into that interstitial space anyway? Am I not digesting it well? And if you digest it well, then you poop out and clear the waste. But I didn't even think about the lymph aspect to it.
Yeah. So here's a cool thing. So, you know, stuff is supposed to go, you know, into the interstitial fluid because you need protein. Because without it, you're going to be dead quick, fast, and hurry.
Okay.
And most of your body is protein. And cortisol breaks down protein. That's why it ravages your gut and ravages your body because it's mostly collagen and protein. But it's got to get out, right? And then also you're breaking down your own body from catabolism, right? Mm-hmm. Every time you train, you destroy tissue on purpose. And that's good because you want to make more of them and get muscular and lean, tall, lean, mean, and confident. But you got to get rid of that waste. That's why inflammation can spiral and go like that. But you also get excess protein in the body because you have a gut that's got holes in it. Mm. And you got like leaky gut malabsorption syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. And then I tell everybody, how you know you got leaky gut? Well, that's easy. Yes, you're alive. I mean, you got it in some way, shape, or form, especially if you got autoimmune disease or chronic pain in my world. I'll stand by that till I'm dead. Mm. But when stuff breaks through the gut lining, there's a reason the most of your lymphatics are located in your gut. The lymphatics is the first system to meet it, to try to capture it, to get it out. Because 70 to 80% of your immune system is located in your gut. And as you know, most of your neurotransmitters are located there. And those are the communication signals that help you wire and fire the neurons in your brain. So the neurons and the wiring and firing in your brain can work well, so you can actually control how hormones work in the body via the brain. Right?
Yeah.
So it's, you can't neglect the lymphatics, because that takes care of the health of all of these hormone organs you're trying to influence.
You know, there is this connection that I learned in the last few years studying progesterone and traumatic brain injury, and that they use very high doses of progesterone intravenously for people with TBIs, and it would help bring down the inflammation. And so I was really curious when I started to get into your work, and I wanted to find out, like, what is the correlation there? And now you're, so there's lymph in the brain, right? This is, and this is a new concept. This is like, did they just discover that there's lymph in the brain? Or have
Yeah, sort of. Here's the funny part about that. It's always been there. They just found it, but they didn't. It was actually an Italian anatomist, Mosconi, I believe it was, 200 years ago, who found the lymphatics in the brain. But like happens a lot in medicine, they didn't agree with the dogma of the day, so they vilified him and told him he was nuts. And, you know, he was right. It's like, see, it was there the whole time. But the technology was able to finally catch up so they could see it. And yeah, so they call that the glymphatic system. So lymphatic and glial for glial cells. They're cells in the brain of different types. And they will help detoxify and take toxins out of the brain and waste out of the brain. So it gets out through the glymphatic system, through the glial cells, mostly called astrocytes. Maybe people heard of astrocytes. I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole, but you got astrocytes and oligodendrocytes and glial, microglial cells, which are the immune cells of the brain. So when your lymphatics in the peripheral part of your body go bananas, they key off the microglia and glial cells in the brain, so they go nuts. So you get inflammation in the brain from having inflammation in the peripheral body. So it can go both ways. And then that also has a drainage system of the brain through the cerebrospinal fluid, the CSF. And that drains to the lymph nodes. They found the drainage of that to the lymph nodes in the neck. So if you're blocked in lymph nodes around the neck, particularly the deep lymph nodes next to the spine, then the toxins stay trapped in the brain. And then the biggest toxin that's up there is protein, right? And the lymphatics help remove that. And then you also have what's called your venous exit route, the veins of the body, we call the venous sinuses. So it exits out through the veins. So once again, you're back to the veins and the lymph, and they also exit to the same point at the neck where all the other waste in your body is going. So your collarbone is ground zero for waste management.
Wow.
I mean, so if you have a gut, if you have a brain problem or a gut problem, because they always go together. Guts and brains via the vagus nerve is the primary conduit, as you know. But that benchmark between them is the collarbone. So you have to work that region first and foremost to make a difference in things. So that's the supply chain choke point, if you will. So yeah, they're finding, they're discovering a lot more now that they can see things with the technology, honestly. But you've got the several drainage routes from the brain. And that's this, and that's really important, because if you get toxins or protein trapped in the brain, you cause neuroinflammation. And when you cause neuroinflammation, you alter how your neurons and your neurotransmitters function. So even if they're there, they're not going to function right, because they're in a hot mess of an environment that they're living in. So anytime you have issues of neuroinflammation or brain issues or pain or hormone issues, that's why I always work the lymphatics first to ensure that the environment that everything is in can function at its optimum. And then they find that lymphatics have an affinity for progesterone.
Really?
Yeah, not so much estrogen, but progesterone.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah, because lymphatics go for more fatty molecules, so they're a fatty transport chain.
Okay.
Particularly long chain fatty acids, the ones you don't like, the ones you don't want. You know, all the processed oils and
PUFAs.
Corn oil and canola oil and all that stuff that's in every freaking thing you eat, at least in the United States. So if you'll overload the lymphatic system, it's already overloaded because they have to take a substantial part of that. That's another reason why short chain fatty acids in your diet are, it'll be less of a blow to the lymphatics that are trying to hang on.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Let's cycle back to the protein. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about protein, but it's, can you break down the protein or not? Because protein is where you get your amino acids from that form peptides. Yeah. And that's what your antibodies and your cytokines go after are peptides. They see those and that they get an identifier and they know what to do based on the peptide chain.
Okay.
Because protein breaks down to become amino acids. Because if you don't break them down into that, then you have protein and then that's where inflammation comes from. You understand? And if you can't break down the peptides into the individual amino acids, then they form their blocks and then that kicks off the sensitivities to whatever you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary thing that breaks down protein is stomach acid. And if you have high stress, you have low stomach acid.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're in this fight or flight, sympathetic, dominant, hypervigilant response, you slow down and stop digestion because it's not the time to eat. It's the time not to die.
Right.
You know, let's eat later. But there is no later for people. And then they get stuck what's called, hypochloridinia, which means incessant low stomach acid production. So even if you're eating protein, you're not breaking it down. And so you're not able to make amino acids and then you can't go through the Krebs cycle and then you're missing minerals. And if you don't have minerals, you can't make enzymes and you can't, there's a lot of stuff.
What a mess.
You've got to go into this stuff, but that's why stress is a big one.
Yeah.
Because that automatically decreases your ability to digest food.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't break food down, it's going to be really hard to absorb it.
Yeah. This makes me think about, as we talk about hypometabolic a lot, we talk about, a sluggish thyroid. And I just had this thought about, you know, thyroid and liver helps us to convert our fuel into energy. And if we're not doing that effectively, then we're running on our emergency backup hormones and adrenaline, cortisol. And like you were saying, this hypersympathetic nervous system or adrenaline dominant, however. But the thyroid is here, right? So here's your collarbone. So do you know if there's some kind of, like, if you had this major issue with lymph drainage that could be creating a sluggish thyroid, because it's hard to shift out of that adrenaline dominant stage and get back into that servicing your thyroid and liver. It's like hard to turn that on again and burn fuel effectively. I wonder if that lymph is creating some more sluggishness there. I think I know the answer.
Well, I mean, I love to see, that's a great thought process. And this is wonderful because I like for people to start to think now. So one, a very cool thing is that you've got a lot of lymph nodes in the body. Okay. And lymph nodes are like mini toilets, I tell people. So just, you know, you want to flush the toilet in your house to get rid of the waste. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what a lymph node is. And you got a lot of them. I mean, anywhere from 300 to 700, depending on the size of the person and the resources that you read. I just want you to know it's like more than a couple.
Wow.
And each one flushes after the other to try to kill stuff and get it out, right? And let's say 700 is what you got. One third of that number is from the neck up.
Wow. Okay.
So that's a big wow. So I want you to think about that for a minute. If nature put one third of those things from the neck up, that means that that's important real estate to drain what? The blood flow to the brain and away from the brain and toxins from the brain and the function of the brain and your thyroid, right? So you, if you look at representations of lymph in the neck, it's massive, the amount that's there. It circles around the major blood flow pipes to and from the brain, right? And then it's all around the thyroid like crazy. Now, this is an important topic for me because I had thyroid cancer over 20 years ago. I woke up to a goiter on my throat, got it checked, and it was malignant, and it spread to the lymph nodes in my neck, and they had to completely remove the thyroid, that thyroidectomy, and lymph nodes removed. So I'm compromised here from flow anyway. And so I'm on thyroid medication all the time. I need to be or I'll be dead in a week. So this area here, you know, it's when those nodes get clogged, all the toxins stay here, right? Yeah. And then they'll go after whatever's around it, right?
Yeah.
So and in my world, I jokingly say, but I'm not joking, no matter what you come on in with, like you say, doc, I got a hangnail on my big toe. I'm like, okay, get down on the table because I'm going to check the lymph nodes in your neck first. Because those are they're that important, because I know the lymph flow from the toe is dependent on the flow at the collarbone, because that's where it needs to go. That's the ultimate drain point for everything. Even your gut, lymph drains to your lower neck, right? And there's no accident that that's also the pathway of your vagus nerve. So your vagus nerve runs along the neck as well. So you can get issues around that vagus nerve in your neck from the lymph nodes. And you've got different layers here. So lymph flow is kind of like blood flow. So what I tell people is this, I want you to think, envision a piping system where arteries, veins, and lymph, and even nerves are the same. They go from really big size pipes to medium size, to smaller, to super small, so small that only one blood cell can get through at a time. Right? But here's what I want you to notice. They're all the same pipe. It's just bigger or smaller, and then medicine gives them all these names to confuse the hell out of you. But I got an artery that's right next to another one that's 1 inch away, and they call it something different. But the artery doesn't know that. It just communicates with each other.
Right.
So you have to understand that if you're blocked at the big pipe, you're going to be blocked at the end at the small end. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's different depths of blood flow and depths of lymph. So you got a lot of lymph at the skin that's very superficial, and those are small, just like capillaries for blood flow. But then they go to some deeper lymph nodes, then the pipes become bigger. Then they actually go to the lymph nodes, and then they take it to the ultimate pipe that's deeper. So you have to make sure that you clear not only the pathways at the skin, but the deep, deep ones. Right? So if you have hormone issues, you got deep lymphatic issues.
Really? Just hand in hand for sure. That's how it is.
No discussion. You got it. Okay. So you have to check that deeper lymph. And then that's some of the things that we teach people how to do. And that's why just showing a lot of attention to your neck. So I tell people that massaging above the collarbone in front of this muscle called your trapezius, that's usually tight on most people, right?
Yeah.
And then on your collarbone and below your collarbone on both sides, lots of times during a day can make a huge difference in your life. And everything can start to feel a little bit different, if not better, because you're opening up the what's called the thoracic inlet. That's above the collarbone is inlet, stuff goes in. Mm-hmm. And then below the collarbone, it's outlet. It goes out. So it's in and out mm-hmm. of what? Yeah, everything that keeps you alive. So that's kind of big, right? Yeah. Well, if you work that, you open up those points and you release tension on all those major nerves. So fluid starts to naturally gravitate towards there anyway, mm-hmm. because that's where all the lymph wants to travel. And then the second place I tell people to rub is the abdomen. Rub and massage and around your navel, especially, mm-hmm. and from below your rib cage, all around in that region. And then I've discovered that people get so freaked out when they go near an abdomen because they're like, never been there before, they never paid attention to it before, or they mm-hmm. feel like they're gonna hurt themselves. I'm like, it's just like any other part of your body, you don't have to be afraid of it. If anything, yeah. it's nice, it's happy to meet you. And then they say, well, how should I rub it and how should I massage it? Should it be deep? Should it be light? Should it be fast? Should it be slow? How often? And my answer is always the same. Yes. Like, just get in there and start moving it around. And then you'll notice that, wow, you know what? I actually feel better like everywhere. Mm-hmm. But here's the key. I need you to rub the abdomen after you rub your collarbone.
Okay.
Because the abdomen is going to send all that lymph to the collarbone.
Mm.
And if your collarbone was blocked and not rubbed first, then you're going to be sending all that fluid to a dam, basically, and it's going to ricochet right back down again.
Interesting.
So it's all about the sequencing and the flow of when you release and when you stimulate areas of your body, when it comes to blood flow and lymph flow.
And I have seen a lot of people get sick after a lymphatic massage, even break out into full blown respiratory cold. And the massage therapist, the one massage therapist that I had spoken with, said it's kind of, it can happen, you know, and it's not uncommon. Was that just a bad way that they did the massage and didn't open up all the areas, or can that happen no matter what, because you've got so much toxicity?
Yeah. So that's actually a normal response, but there's different degrees of it.
Okay.
So that's like I don't even like to use the word detoxification anymore because it's almost like a trigger word. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I say waste management, basically. But when stuff has been trapped in you for a long period, if stuff is trapped in you for a long period, I already know you're compromised on being able to get rid of it.
Right.
Right. So if I'm trying to get rid of it, I can't rush it. So you're going to feel kind of crappy when you do it because the stuff is starting to move out and move around. Mm-hmm. And then your immune system's going to try to take it out. Mm-hmm. Right? But the longer you've suffered, which means the longer you've been sick and the more issues you have, the slower you have to go.
Okay.
Because you have a system that's sensitive to anything that you do to it. Mm-hmm. So its capacity to handle even good things is low, right?
Right.
So that's why you can do some lymph work, but you can't drop a nuclear bomb of lymph work on somebody because it's like, oh, lymph work is great. Yes. But it's like going to the gym for the first time. You don't want to do like a huge thing because you're going to pay for it the next day where you can't move.
Yeah.
So I tell people you should expect to feel tiredness, fatigue, lethargy, maybe an increase in pain or discomfort, but that's normal. Don't be scared. You'll actually have a return of some symptoms that maybe you haven't had in a while, and that's mm-hmm. normal. But, I'll have to tell them to make sure that they rehydrate. But you can get that if you definitely do too much to someone on an initial session. So you have to tiptoe in. Mm-hmm. That's why I always start from that neck region. Little trick that I've learned, because you learn that lesson. I would say one of the best ways to learn something is by screwing it up. So my clients would tell me that they liked it, but they got hit by a Mack truck. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to do that because you're going to slow the progress down because now the body has to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to send them into what they call a retoxification, which means that they are out for like 2 months.
Wow.
Right. I always go from the collarbone and I do my lymph work from collarbone up first on a single set. When you've been compromised and you've got maybe autoimmune disease or polyautoimmunity, more than one, and you've been hit pretty hard, I tiptoe in. I go from neck up and then I stop.
Okay.
And I say, how did you do? The magic question is, how did you feel after that? And then they say, well, you know, I felt great. Okay, perfect. Then we can do that again and add some more.
Okay.
And then if they say, oh man, that was like a lot, then I say, okay, let's take a day or two break to let your system catch up. And so that tells me you're really compromised. So I'm still going to go back to the head and the neck, but then I'm just going to tiptoe in a little bit slower. But here's what I do know. If you have that kind of reaction from some lymph work, I know that you've got a deep lymph block somewhere. My lymphatic work is very different than most lymphatic programs. And I'm going to tell you that from the get-go.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that in all your resources on your site. It's so different. I don't see anything like it.
Yeah, so you have to stay true to some principles for lymphatics because it's based on the premise of how the lymph system works and how fluids flow in the body. So you just need to know that fluids go to the collarbone.
Okay.
Now, how you choose to go about influencing that is where the techniques come into play, right? The sequencing, in my viewpoint, should never change, which means that I'm never, ever going to start at your foot and work my way up. No, no, no.
Okay.
Because that's just based on fluid flow. So I work down from the collarbone to the foot.
Okay.
Right. Which we can explore later if we need to. But yeah, so I've studied a lot of different lymph techniques because first of all, I love the system and I wanted to study how people viewed it. Like, okay, osteopathy kind of goes at it this way. Eastern medicine this way. Ayurvedic medicine that way. They're all trying to accomplish the same things. It's just the techniques are a bit different. Now, you have to take into account that it can be highly individual based on how much inflammation somebody has.
Okay.
But most lymph work is very superficial. Like they'll maybe use a dry brush and it's lightly, or people had massage, they put the hands on there and there's very little movement and motion. Mine is much deeper than that. And it's much faster, my applications to things, because mine's kind of a crossover between all of those techniques and to what I found works optimally from there. But I've based my approach on learning from all the other greats before me, if you will. And it's just the stuff that comes with time that you just need to understand when you can go deeper and when you can't. And a lot of that stuff, I'm going to be honest with you, I can't teach that to you. Like you got to get there and learn it and develop the feel and do a lot of practice, but still stay true to the fundamental concepts because that's where the individuality comes into play and the exploration. But the one non-negotiable is that you always start from the collarbone because that's the lowest pressure of fluids of lymph and veins in the body. That's waste.
Yeah.
But you always start there and you work out towards the highest pressure areas. Those are at the opposite ends of everywhere from your neck. So the top of your head, the tips of your fingers, and the bottom of your feet. So that always stays the same. How you do it, that's up to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But you know, when you talk to doctors, practitioners, and you say, you know, what do I do for lymph drainage? They often say, well, run, walk, jump. Yes, but not, it's not enough, right? Especially when you have a buildup and some blockages.
Yeah. So the operative word is it should be enough.
It should be.
But it's often not. Because one, whenever you move or do anything, you're moving limp. But sometimes you're not doing intentionally with limp work. It's kind of by accident, right?
Right.
So it's important to talk about what actually is optimal for moving your lymphatics. This is an easy one, movement. So, and then people say, what type of movement? And then my favorite three-word answer that I've used a couple of times is, or a three-letter answer is yes. I just need you to move, right?
Yeah.
But move differently than you normally move. That's the secret. Yeah. You get some, what we call variation, variability, and variety in there. That's from my friend, Joanne Elphinstone, who's a physical therapist. And another word for that is just move different.
That makes sense, because it would seem when we're very stagnant and we do the same things all the time, even if you're active and you go for walks or you go to the gym, but we do the routine things the same. So it would make sense that that a lot of muck would get stuck in places that we've pushed it to and didn't fully move it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You are correct, because so you can get stagnant limp because you don't move enough. I just want you to think about water in nature. When you see water moving in a stream, that's good water. When you see water stagnant in a pool, that's full of disease. Don't drink from there. Don't go. You're going to die, right? Because you breed disease. And that's what happens inside of your body at the same time. It's called inflammatory interstitial stasis. Big fancy word that means you got inflammation around the fluids of your cells. Stasis means stagnant. So, but you can also have stagnation because, like you said, when you do the same kind of movements all the time, it's just like water. Well, water is going to pick a route and it's going to keep flowing in that route until you alter the route. So then that's why you want to change up your routine. So if you walk all the time, how about you walk backwards once in a while? Right? That's a good one. Or jump up and down a little bit when you walk, or karaoke walk, you know, just do different things like that.
Great idea.
But walking is great because it's a built-in pump, right? And your calves are built-in rebounders. So but people say, yeah, rebounding is good for limp. I'm like, yeah, it is. And you got built-in ones that are called your calves.
Oh.
Jump up and down. They're called the second heart for a reason, because they pump venous blood back towards the heart.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, that's Eastern medicine. And so movement. And then the second one is breathing. But not just any type of breathing. It's diaphragmatic driven breathing. And for those that might not know, because not everybody knows what we know, it's the big muscle that sits at the bottom of your rib cage, below your lungs and on top of your organs, that when you breathe primarily through your nose, you really drive the diaphragm muscle to contract, which pushes it towards the floor. It pushes your organs towards the floor. And you increase pressure in your abdomen, called intra-abdominal pressure. And then when you exhale, the muscle relaxes and comes up, and then the organs come back up, and that's a pump. And what it does is it moves the largest lymph node in the body that sits right in the center of your abdomen, that takes all the lymphatics from the lower body and your organs and your liver as the break point to go back to your neck.
Really?
So if you don't breathe through your diaphragm, you close down your pump and you stagnate. Plus, you move the blood flow around the abdomen. You need a lot of blood flow in the gut. And the vagus nerve has a big control of that. But if you got inflammation in the brain, you won't have good vagus nerve communication to your gut. So you'll decrease blood flow in your gut because you got inflammation in the brain. That's why I have you clear your neck first.
Right.
So it's when you do stuff that matters, not just doing it. It's like with your order matters big time. So that breathing is a piston. So I have people that don't move and don't breathe through the diaphragm, and those two things are shut off. But here's the thing. I have people that say, Doc, I got this, man. I am a movement ninja. I do all sorts of movements all the time. And I've taken every breathing course you can know. I know it inside and out. Why do I have to do lymphatics? Because sometimes the obstructions and the blockages are so intense that those are no longer enough to clear them. You have to go in there by hand and manually free them up. Then you breathe and then you move and then you can have it. It's just like my example would be, let's go back to the mini toilets. Mm-hmm. So let's say you got a toilet in your home and then you start to put waste in there and all of a sudden it's clogged. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you go to flush the toilet to get pressure to move it. Right. But you're like, holy cow, every time I flush it, the water keeps coming higher towards the rim. This is not going to be good.
Panic. Right?
So that's the breathing and the movement that they can't do it anymore. Too big of a block. And then I tell people, well, what do you do next? Well, I try to get the plunger or I get a snake. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, you got to put some elbow grease into it, right? So I'm going to do and move that. And all of a sudden, all that stuff goes where it needs to go. Then you flush the toilet. Then everything just goes like that.
Gotcha.
So that's why in my world, lymph manual resets and lymph work always comes first before anything else. So it's step one, then everything else are the steps after that. Because if you don't get that first step, you have a blockage in the whole system. So osteopathic medicine, which I've studied a lot, it's probably my favorite discipline next to Eastern medicine. They had three words that they put together that says it all for me. And it's my strategy of whatever I do right now. And when you see it, and when I say it to you, you're going to go, wow, you know, that makes a lot of sense based on what I've been saying. And then the next answer is people say is that the question they say is that there's no way it can be that simple though. Can't be that simple. And I'm like, well, first of all, who told you that? Right? It's this drainage precedes supply. Drainage precedes supply. So let's break it down.
Okay.
What does precede mean?
Before.
What does supply mean in the world that we've been talking about? Well, whatever you're trying to get to something, nutrients, oxygen, you know, minerals, micronutrients, macronutrients, hormones, whatever. Okay. So what's drainage? Well, that's the waste management side. That's the lymphatic side. That's the venous side. So that has to come first, because if it doesn't, your supplies can't get to their target, even though they're there. You follow?
Yep.
Now that seems like no big deal, but that's the whole thing right there. Like if you get those reversed, you're going to tread water. Like, I don't care what you do, because you got it backwards. So if you flip it, right, the key is you have to titrate a little bit of both, right? I can't just throw a huge amount of supply at you. People do that. They're taking 30 supplements at a clip.
Right.
And I'm like, well, did you ever think about what those supplements become? They also become waste. Thank you very much. Right. If you can even absorb them, first of all. So if you don't have stomach acid, that ain't happening either. Mm-hmm. Right. So I can't throw too much supply, but I also can't waste clear you too quick. Because then you have a system that can't tolerate it. So you have to do what they call in somatic work or emotional based work. You have to titrate. Mm-hmm. Slow. Little bit of this, little bit of that, monitor their response, see what the thing is. So a lot of times I tell people, you get better, not so much from what you start doing, but from what you stop doing. So a lot of times I have them back off many things that they're doing because they're overloading a system that doesn't have the capacity to do anything with what you're sending to it.
Interesting.
You know? Because that's ultimately that's what's making the decision. Your nervous system is. So when you're hypervigilant, you can't take a lot of stimulation. That's the person when you say hi to them and then they snap.
Yeah. Right?
Or they're in a shutdown mode and they just stop trying. Mm-hmm. So they're in a frozen response, hoping that the stressor bypasses them.
Yeah.
That's the shutdown mode, right? And so you have the nervous system side, that's the ultimate block, but then you also have the absorption and nutrient part side. Mm-hmm. You have to go easy. And what you'll see is that it's not either or, it's always both, right? Because when I explained it before about your nervous system, right? If you're locked into survival mode, you're so tense that your body's like, dude, I'm not letting you do anything right now.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is. Because my main goal right now is not about feeling good. It's about, how about we don't die?
Right.
We'll deal with that other stuff later.
Well, so many people are in that.
Stuck. Most people are, especially over the last couple of years because of this incessant stress response.
Yeah.
And here's something interesting that I learned, if I'm okay to say that. I don't know how much time we got, but.
Oh, yeah. No, it's your time.
They say that stress is the incessant, overwhelming inability to adapt to stress is, if not the number one cause, but primary cause of chronic disease. You get stuck in an inflammatory state.
Yeah.
Basically, right? So when you get stuck in that hyper-vigilant response, your nervous system really won't be open to any type of change that you want to send to it because it's in a lockdown mode. And I said, okay, well, what stresses the body, right? And first of all, everything stresses the body.
Mm-hmm.
Even therapeutic interventions are stressors.
Yeah, that's how sauna works, right? And cold therapy is a type of stress.
They're stressors. So one of the reasons that people don't get better is because they're doing too many good things at once.
Hmm.
You understand?
Very
familiar. Hitting with a good sledgehammer is going to hurt you just as much as a bad one. Right? So you have to keep that in mind because I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this to get better. But you have to have the capacity of your system to let you adapt to it.
Hmm.
And the longer you've been in flight mode, the less adaptable it becomes because it chooses the fight or flight mode all the time.
Yeah.
The reason it chooses it is because it's been working for it so far. And how do you know that? Well, that's a simple answer because you're not dead. So it knows it's working.
Interesting. Right? Yeah.
So it's going to default to that all the time until you teach it another option, but you ask it, you don't force it. Because if I force it, it's going to push back harder. Like think about your relationship with anybody in your life. If I get up in your face and I'm in your grill and I force you to do something, you're probably not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the same thing with your nervous system and in your cells. But I learned through studying some neuroscience and perception and emotion-based therapies that the number one stressor to the human nervous system is uncertainty,
fear.
Lack of control, and not knowing, inability to predict what's coming. And I want you to stop for a moment and think about the last 3 years of what that was. That's the creamy filling of the stress donut right there. We didn't know what was happening, when it was going to stop. We had no control. Your system went from zero to 10 million miles per hour in one shot. And for those people that were right on the edge of going into the sympathetic dominant or getting an autoimmune disease or this, then they got it.
Yeah.
Boom. Just like that. Right. So that's one of the things that when you understand how the brain works, that's why your brain takes in as much information as it can get from its environment, internal, from your guts is a big one. My intuition, my gut instinct, don't neglect that one. And my outside world through your senses, that's information. That's data. So it takes that information to help it formulate what it's going to do next. Right? That's called prediction. The more information I have or the different types of information I have, the better, because now I got more to work with. You understand?
Yeah.
If you take that away, I got less to work with. And automatically, what is that? That's uncertainty.
Yeah.
Right? So it freaks you out. That's why you can't give people too many options either. Because if you give them too many options, that's going to stress them out too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I stand in front of my toothpaste aisle. I'm like, why is there 500 brands of toothpaste here? What is up with that?
Yeah, it's like you freeze when you have too many options. That was the perfect storm. You're right. It just created all this uncertainty and made it even easier for people to get sick, right? And not recover. It made it even easier. This is the perfect storm.
Yeah, it is. You know, but here's the empowering part too, that what we have as a unique ability as human beings is choice. Mm. Right? So you have all this information coming on in, and it goes to the brain, and most of it coming in, you're not aware of. Like 80% of it is stuff that you're not even paying attention to. Right? Because if you had to pay attention to everything coming into your brain, it would explode in half a second. It's yeah. Like, I can't deal with this. Right. So once it goes in, that's not the part. It's the interpretation of the information coming in.
Okay.
That's the story that you're telling yourself about the information. And, or worse yet, the story that somebody else told you about what it means, right? So you listen to somebody else's crap, or you're just going to go back to the same story you told yourself in the past again, because that's what the brain is designed to do. Well, this is what we did last time. Well, let's just do it again.
Yeah.
So that's called a habit, and that's called a behavior. That's why they're hard to break, because your body just defaults to it. Mm-hmm. Well, just do that. One, because it's way easier. And two, wait for it, it's a lot less metabolically expensive to do it that way. Because when I have to make a choice, that takes more thinking, and I'm already tired. So forget it. I'm just going to do the same thing again. Then the story is there. Mm-hmm. And then you have your output. Your output is your movement or your behavior. So where you can make that shift is that split second interface between input and output, where you have the choice. But hang on for it. You know that, but it's hard to do.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do when you're full of information. Mm-hmm. Because when you're full of information, those things don't wire and fire so fast. So what happens is that you say, I'd love to, but my brain can't keep up. And then I'm going to say, well, that's why you need to do lymphatic work, because lymphatic work will help you clear some of that gunk out of your system. So maybe you can wire and fire, because every time you fire a neuron to neuron in your brain called thinking, guess what you make?
Waste.
Bingo. Exactly.
So we got to clear the waste.
Where's that waste got to go? And your answer better be coming to me. It's going to go through my lymph and my veins. And then I'm going to say to you, where's that got to go? And then you're going to say, the neck, collarbone, congratulations. You're getting it. Yes. See how this works?
Yes.
So no matter what scenario you throw at me, I'm always going to end up back to the same place with the lymph and the blood flow and the neck. Why? Because it's a fundamental law of physiology. Never going to change.
Hello. Quick interruption to tell you about the in-home dried urine Dutch Complete hormone test. It's not enough to just know your levels, high or low, but for example, what are you doing with your estrogen? Is it being pushed down unhealthy, potentially dangerous pathways that could lead to breast or prostate cancer, fibroids, or insulin resistance? Or are you converting your testosterone into estrogen and having hair loss and low libido? Or are your adrenals burnt out and at the root of all your hormonal struggles? No point in guessing. I love this test. I take it once a year and it keeps me on track with my goal of aging gracefully. Use your coupon ED25, as in estrogen dominance 25, and get $25 off your test interpretation and 6-week program of supplement, detox, and dietary recommendations. I have 5 years of experience reading and interpreting this test and was trained by the makers Precision Analytical. Coupled with my gut health expertise, and this program is about as comprehensive as you're going to get. Check it out in the show notes for more details.
It really clears, it sheds light on so much. It's like you dropped a veil in regards to all these things, because a lot of my questions, which you answered without me asking them, really comes back to what you just said, including, like the cognitive decline, the increase in cognitive decline and dementia and Alzheimer's, and how it's gotten so much worse, and how, you know, we are so exposed to so much more toxicity than 10, 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And so what's happening is everything you just said, it just goes right back to that. And even thinking about those proteins again in the brain and amyloid plaques, right, and like what could be folding over these proteins could be the lack of the ability to get rid of those proteins out of the brain. I mean, it really just sheds light on all kinds of issues that we suffer from.
Yeah, it really does. And because, you know, listen, when you've been sick for a long time or so many things are going on, it's easy to start to have resentment towards your body, and you sometimes become angry at your body. And a lot of that's from fear, because anger and fear are kind of on the same energetic scale, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also uncertainty, for goodness sakes, because you don't know what's going on. So I'm back to that again. Or you have people in medicine that, you know, don't get it, or all your tests come back normal by their standards. And you're like, well, that's great, but I can't get out of freaking bed.
Yeah.
Or listen, you have uncertainty a lot because you have 10 people telling you 10 different things on what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's stressful too. And then you don't trust your gut, because then they tell you, don't do anything unless this tells you to do it. Right. And you're like, well, forget, I'm not going to do anything. Right. And so, you know, all I'm trying to tell people is that if you can start with a fundamental premise of, now that you know why, the body always has a reason for what it's doing. It never does anything by accident. And when you understand the basic fundamental principle of what I try to teach is this, and if I may.
Of course.
So a friend of mine, Jerry Tennant, once said, chronic disease only occurs when you lose the ability to make new cells that work. Chronic disease only occurs when you lose the ability to make new cells that work. Because if you can make new cells that work, you wouldn't stay sick. You understand?
Got it.
Because you're supposed to stay sick. You're supposed to get sick, but you're not supposed to stay sick.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's called a resilient nervous system and immune system. Like, bring me, hit me. I'm going to get back up. I'm good. So I'm tougher the next time you come around.
Yeah.
Right? And then I'm like, okay, well, that's brilliant. And then, you know, I think to myself, well, what do cells need in order to regenerate and make new ones? Now, they need like a gajillion things, but it's a basic fundamental premise. Well, I need nutrients and I need oxygen. Those are big ones. And that's the supply side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Need that. And then it's got to get rid of the waste after that. So it's nutrients in, waste out. And that's drainage precedes supply.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
Those are the two ingredients that the gajillion things you're going to pick after that are based off of. Okay? So if I can go after that fundamental premise, and now it's everything that I told you about today of, can the stuff get to it? Can the stuff get away from it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that everything is unicorns and rainbows, and if you do limp work, everything's going to magically get better. Sometimes it does, right?
Because
the human body is under no obligation to make sense to you. But I can tell you this much. If it's there and you don't clear the pathway, I'm going to contend you're always going to struggle. You don't have the fundamental build. You don't have your ABCs to continue after that, even though all of those things are good. So I look at it like a checklist. I'm going to see if I need to work on them. And if your routes are good, I'm like, perfect. I don't have to worry about it. That's awesome. Now there's other stuff that we can focus on.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are there, that's where we go first. That's where we go first.
Okay. Yeah,
that's really the basics and fundamental of this stuff, is nutrients in, waste out. And I can't remember if I said this before, because, you know, I love this stuff so much, but everybody's focusing on the nutrients in part. And if they focus on the waste out part, they usually focus on the liver.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's good. You should. But I want you to throw your lymph in there too. Right. And when to get those two, then you'll notice a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're going to discover over time is that when somebody's had issues for a long time with autoimmune disease or neuroinflammation or chronic pain or anything. And if you got a gut problem, you got a lymph problem. Yeah, zero discussion, no debate. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to work around in that abdominal and front region of the body.
And you said the largest lymph node is in the abdomen. Is that somewhere that's reachable with palpation?
Or it can be when you're good at it and you're not scared to push in there. So it's actually called the cisterna chyli. And not everybody has it though. About 50% of people have the cisterna chyli. But in my world, it doesn't matter because I know it's all got to go to the same pipe at your neck anyway.
Yeah.
You just don't have that with you. It's still going to go up there.
Yeah.
And it's different in everybody anatomical wise, but yeah, I'll show you how you can locate it. If you have one finger in your belly button, mm-hmm. and then you have the other finger at the top of the abdomen, right below your sternum. You know, you have this big bone that sticks out. It's called your xiphoid process. You stick your finger right below that and you have your finger in the abdomen. If you put your finger about the halfway mark and you move off a little bit to your right side, you know, maybe about the width of your thumb, if that, that's rough location about an inch or two above or below where the cisterna chyli sits. And if you're lying on your back, usually it's easier to feel. And if you start to press your fingers in there slowly, a lot of time it should be soft and pliable and no problem. A lot of people feel like they're pushing on a baseball.
Wow. That's the chyli. Okay.
And they have a lot of tension in that region because they may have a lot of inflammation around the intestines that sit right there. But you have a huge amount of nerve clusters that sit below there. You know, some people call them ganglia or plexi. One of the big ones is your AKA solar plexus, celiac plexus.
Okay. Right
there. And it's a very emotional spot too. So that's an area where people hold a lot of emotional tension and shock, trauma to the body.
Really? And like a lot of nausea as well. I noticed that, you know, working on that area myself, and this could be because I never worked on the collarbone, but just a lot of nausea, touching that area, just a little icky in there, you know, and I think it's common.
Probably. Yeah, it certainly can be. I have a lot of people that, you know, nobody's really ever checked there on them. And the number one reason is because they don't complain of pain there.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, if it doesn't hurt, that means it's perfectly fine, right?
Right.
No. And then I'm like, well, first of all, how do you know it doesn't hurt? Like, I'm going to stick my fingers in there and you're going to find out. But as soon as I go near there, I can observe a sympathetic dominant fight or flight response in the body right away.
Right away.
And that tells you right there that that's a very vulnerable spot for that person's nervous system. And you're going to have to address it if they're going to get better.
You know, this brings me to some questions. I know we're running over here.
That's okay. I got time.
Okay, great. Because I had quite a few questions sent our way, but we'll just start with these ones. So one of them is really kind of about this, like with nausea and like chronic nausea. And how does one tell if they are, well, these are two different questions, bloated, water retention, or stagnant lymph?
Well, if you have stagnant lymph, it can be all of them. You're allowed to have more than one problem. It doesn't have to be either or. You'll typically notice if you have poor lymphatic flow and poor blood flow and you're going to have poor vagal function at the same time because the vagus nerve runs right along that. And then you'll usually get bloating that goes with it.
Okay.
So I have a lot of people that when you do vagal nerve work, vagal nerve stimulation work, sometimes just up in the neck, right? They say my bloating gets a little bit better. Yeah. One, because when you work the vagus nerve, you're going to stimulate stomach acid production and that decreases bloating.
Right? Okay.
Because otherwise food's going to sit in your gut and you're going to get gut rot and fermentation and you're going to get bloated from all the gas that gets there, right?
Yeah.
So that can help that. But also going in that region, when you get the lymphatics out and the blood flow going, that's also going to help the digestion and repair of the gut wall. And then your bloating can begin to to go down.
Okay.
So the beautiful thing is that you'll usually get all three.
Yeah.
Because those systems work together closely.
Right.
And doing that. That's why abdominal massages work so very well. But it's also why I have you do the neck first, because when you do the collarbone, you also stimulate the vagus nerve quite nicely. And stimulating the vagus nerve near the neck is a more powerful stimulation for the vagus nerve than in your abdomen.
Okay. So with that, how about tinnitus, vertigo, plugged sinuses?
Good question. That's a really good one. Once again, I'm going to be the poster boy for that because I have tinnitus. I've had it for quite a few years. I've been able to make a slight change in that from some of the work that I do with lymphatics, but not a lot. There's usually that's multifactorial, which means there's usually more than one rabbit you got to chase with that one. Yeah, when you get inflammation around the lymphatics on the head, jaw, and face, that can definitely impact the vestibular system for balance. Because one, you're going to impact the nerves in the face and the head called cranial nerves. Those are ones that come directly off the brainstem. So they're super powerful in relationship to neurology. But without going too far deep in the neurological rabbit hole, they discovered that the cerebrospinal fluid and some of the lymph will drain along cranial nerve pathways, cranial nerves. So it'll drain along the optic nerve, the nerve to the eyeball. And it drains along the olfactory nerve. That's the nerve for smell here. And that's also, you know, one of the reasons why people lose smell because with COVID, because it went straight up and through here and went through the olfactory tract into the brain. And then it took away the drainage pipe for the olfactory nerve. And it'll go through the trigeminal nerve. And that's the nerve that gives you the sensation to the face. It's also for the teeth. That's why the dentist gives you a big giant needle in your mouth when he drills your mouth. And the muscles of mastication, chewing. And the other one is the vestibulocochlear nerve. That's the nerve for the inner ear for hearing and balance. So a lot of times when you get the lymphatics to drain, you'll help drain the ear. So I see a lot of infants and children who have chronic ear infections because it's lymph clog driven.
Really?
And you got to drain the lymph. Yeah, on my Instagram channel, I posted a really cool video up called the Gall Breath Technique, G-A-L Breath. GAL breath. It's an osteopathic move that they teach you of slightly traction the ear and the jaw a little bit. And it helps the drainage of the ear canal to help with ear infections. So it's a really easy technique you can do on yourself or to your children if you have
them. Great. Yeah, I think I saw that. I have a trigeminal nerve issue when I like eat something sour. You know how you normally get that shocking thing that comes to your, well, it's like that times 100 into my ears, into it just like shocking. And I have no idea, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, this all has a lot to do with the, I have a TBI. And I was thinking, I see now you're talking about this, just all of my brain really could use a nice big lymph drainage.
It can be. So we have, we teach a lymphatic course that the basics and fundamentals of lymph. And then we have an advanced course that's for head, neck, and brain for the TBI, concussions, and trauma stuff like, because it's, you have to clear the lymph in the body first before you go after the brain.
Okay. Yeah. That is something I'm definitely interested in. Have you ever heard, and this is one of the questions from someone just a little bit ago, actually, but it reminded me of an issue that I personally have suffered with. I have a form of the herpes virus that exacerbates on, we think, my vagus nerve. Well, there you go.
And yeah, it'll travel up like the vagus nerve.
Type of like encephalitis almost. I mean, I've suffered. It's the reason I do what I do now is because I was desperately looking for ways to heal it. And, did, you know, found that there were, I never did any lymph drainage. And I still get it sometimes, but I don't get it as much. And so that was the question, was about the vagus nerve and viral issues and lymphatic drainage.
Yeah, big time. So lymph comes into play with everything because, like I said before, it keeps the fluid around all the stuff that you're trying to change clear. Yeah, if that fluid's a mess, you're going to be a mess, period.
Okay.
So, yeah, but there's actually research on that where they found that Epstein-Barr and herpes viruses, particularly the herpes virus of HH6, I believe, which is the most common one, that'll it travels up through the vagus nerve, and that's how it gets into the brain. Oof. And you'll have irritation along that chain. And you'll find it when you have a stress response. When you get under a stress response, those loads of toxins, either from viruses or bacteria, they usually begin to manifest themselves again because you're compromised on your immune system and it weakens. And then those things are like, this is great field day. We can come out because the system's got, it's a little bit less strong.
Yeah.
So now we can play a little bit more because you always have those. They don't go away. And once you get a virus, you always got it. But your immune system is the one that keeps it at bay, right? And then when you take a hit, it'll come back out. But you have a lot of different systems in your body. You know, your cardiovascular system, your immune system, your all this sort of thing. Two systems have a memory. It's your immune system and your nervous system, which means they're going to go to the Rolodex of what they did last time. So when you get under a stress response, your body you'll start to manifest symptoms like it did when you were sick years ago, because that's the go-to switch. So a lot of times you get symptoms of an illness plus the symptoms of the prior one on top of it, because it's just it comes back. Does that make sense?
That actually just made me emotional. This is exactly how it works. Exactly. And it doesn't even have to be a major stressor. It just has to be a quick hit, like a quick thing, like fear or, you know, whatever. And it used to trigger, I call it my back thing, because it seems to happen in my back, but it's really the vagus nerve line completely. And it would just inflame my brain and I would be set. And that was it. It didn't have to be a big deal. It just had to be stress. And I go right back into that state. So that's incredible. I mean, I've managed, like I said, but I still can feel it there. It still lives with me in that inflammatory state. And so this is great. I want to really try the lymph aspect. And
yeah, I think that would be very helpful for you. And I'm really glad you brought that up about the stress. It doesn't have to be a big stress to set you off, because it's back to what we talked about before. It's about capacity. So, you know, you have my friend Eric Cobb from Z Health uses a nice analogy of a stress bucket, he calls it. It's like filling up a bucket with a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it can hold a lot of things, but the closer you get near the top, the less you can put in it. So if you're right at the limit of the edge of your stress box or your stress bucket, that's the person that all of a sudden, you know, it's the one thing that sets you off and it seems so trivial.
Yeah.
But your bucket was full.
Yeah.
So you got to empty something out of that bucket to get your capacity to go up.
I wish it were that easy to just, you know, but yeah, it's like this other, just eliminating some of that inflammatory gunk. Because it's almost like, you know, when you go to someone's house who's a hoarder or really messy, you know, they're messy. Like in their minds, they're messy. The way they handle things is messy. Their lives are messy. And I feel like that's similar with the body. Like when you've got this gunk, and I know I do, it's like, it's hard to make healthy decisions. It's hard. You default, like you said, to things you used to do, habitual things that you've created, patterns or grooves in your program that you just go right back onto the rails instead of like, you know what? It takes a lot of effort and tools and resources to create new grooves and new patterns to get off of that. And not be a cluttery lymph person.
Yeah, that's really important distinction there. Like I said before, is that once you understand how the brain works and how fluids work in the body, you'll really understand everything. Because the brain, uses most of your oxygen, most of your glucose, about 25% of blood flow goes there. And it, you know, it takes a lot of energy to use that guy. And thinking is work. So when you have inflammation and you have blood sugar dysregulation or hormone dysregulation, see, your brain just makes a decision and say, dude, that's way too hard. Don't pick up a new habit. Just keep going to this one because it's way easier. And then it just goes, okay. Because in nature, honestly, that's the smart play. So in actuality, it's not broken. It's really freaking smart. You just have to give it a different option to do it. That's also one of the reasons why you can't overload it either. Because when you do neurology work, it's interesting that people fatigue really quickly when they have brain inflammation. Mm-hmm. Like they can read a paragraph and they need to sleep. So that tells you there's a lot of neuroinflammation, a lot of waste in there because you don't have the capacity. And then you have to stop because if you keep going, you're never going to learn anything or change a pattern ever because you just hit survival mode. Done. So going for an hour is wasting your time.
Yeah.
That's why you have to start and go easy, just a little bit, maybe a minute, 5 to 7 times a day is way better than 7 minutes straight when you got stuff going on, right? It's little breaks that you put in there. The fundamental rule of neurology is that you have to do what you can't do.
You have to do what you can't do. Yeah. Make
that's the only way you're going to groove it.
It's what is it like neuroplasticity, like making new neuro pathways by making different decisions. And you can do that. I think it's something like every 7 seconds or something, new pathways could be formed, or you can just fall back on the other pathways. That's pretty.
Yeah. Funny. It's a little bit of both. I mean, your brain is always cutting off stuff. It's called, you know, pruning. It's chopping away stuff that you haven't used in a while. Right. Yeah. And that's why you got to revisit stuff a lot, like groove these new patterns, repetition to get that in. But you also have to kind of throw a little variation in there because the brain gets bored quick.
Yeah.
And so you need novelty in there. Right. So that's why that's what learning is. Learning is making mistakes and then giving a slight alteration in that. But learning is stressful because you're making mistakes.
Right.
But I'm back to the same thing. If you want to wire and fire, well, if you don't have the right brain environment called parenchyma, you know, that's your swimming pool, the stuff in it, that's not going to happen either.
Right.
So that's what brain fog is. Brain fog is one of the first signs of lymph issues.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because I know brain fog, you got neuroinflammation, period. And you got to get that. You got to get on top of that quick.
Okay. That's really common in the group, really common with these women. Okay. Gynecomastia. Can that be a lymph issue?
Yeah, it can be. So, you know, call it my gynecomastia. Yeah.
Yeah. Gynecomastia.
Yeah. I see that a lot in my world too, because I deal with a lot of bodybuilders and they take excess testosterone and they go estrogenic.
Uh-huh.
And then they get the gynecomastia, you know, and then you just got to take the Clovid and stuff like that. But I also have men that is, because men have estrogen issues too, not just women.
Very much, yeah.
I have a lot of men who have prostate issues, and a lot of that's from the estrogen dominance that feeds some candida issues, and candida is estrogenic too. So they go, big cause of chronic urinary tract infections and prostatitis is candida infections. At least it was for me.
Wow.
And you want to clear that lymphatics, because what happens too is that when the body is surrounded by toxins and it can't get rid of toxins, it has to find a way to deal with the toxins. So one of the ways it deals with toxins is it stores body fat, because fat surrounds toxins, and fat's an organ, and fat's estrogenic. Right. So the body says, okay, well, you know, Perry's lymph sucks and his liver is compromised and he doesn't have this. I'm like, well, we just got to puff him up. So I'm going to put body fat to protect him, because I want to try to keep it away from the vital structures that are deeper. And then I'm going to actually swell the container to dilute the waste. So I'm going to make him retain fluid.
Wow.
So you'll get puffy and bloated and swollen as a protective response for toxicity, and you'll develop a lot of mucus because mucus is protection. It's going to coat stuff like that, right? And then you'll get very cystic too. Cystic is a protective coating around something. So all of that, I know that I'm dealing with somebody who has a high antibody inflammatory nervous system, and they drive a lymphatic antibody type response. And so, but then these are the people that try to go to the gym and then burn body fat, right? And I'm like, okay, well, that's good. But when you go to the gym and you burn body fat, what do you make when you burn body fat? You burn body fat and you make waste. And then I'm putting waste on top of waste. And then the nervous system has two options. It's not going to change at all, and you're going to stay there and plateau. Or you're going to put on more weight and get worse and feel sicker. And then you'll end up quitting because you feel like crap.
That's a that's a vicious cycle of the cortisol belly and the estrogen fat adipose tissue burning it, and then all of a sudden you have more estrogenic symptoms because you're burning that fat, and then you store it again because your body's trying to protect you again. Vicious cycle. How do you feel about saunas, and that you mentioned dry brushing earlier? I know it's not the end all and the be all, but do you recommend it?
Yeah, they can be very helpful. I have a lot of toys that I use on my own. I have a far infrared sauna that I go into, but you have to also tiptoe into that, because when you step into those things, I mean, that releases toxins.
Yeah,
I always tell people before you go into the sauna, you do some manual release of your lymph.
Okay.
Because what happens is you open up the channels for when you get in there and you heat it up, and it's going to move around. Or you can do it when you're in the sauna, right? But yeah, you got to go easy on that because of how much it's going to move things around. I have a lot of people that just jump into those things for an hour, and I'm like, oh no, don't do that, right? And then a sauna it heats things up, it dilates, right? So it opens up what? Flow in the body. I like heat applications more than cold applications in my general approach to things. That's a big part of my Eastern medicine influence as well, is the heat, not the cold.
Keeping and, the body warmer and the temperature warmer can increase lymph flow, as you're saying.
Because you dilate things.
Makes sense.
It's called dilation, and sympathetic dominance gives gives dilation to some things, but constriction to others, tightens up tissue. So that's why I do a lot of, warm heat packs or castor oil packs and stuff like that with some on it around the abdomen.
So castor packs then as well, that's going to increase lymph flow and blood flow to areas.
That's one of my favorite things to use for moving toxins around and removing toxins, a good old castor oil pack.
Great.
Of course, you know, value of that on the, people use that a lot on the liver, but, I place that right over the belly button.
And then the last question, I know a lot of women who say, and they're kind of proud of it, that they don't sweat. And I always say that's really bad. And my mom used to brag about it, and I never used to sweat, actually. And then I started doing sauna, and I started getting a better metabolic state with my thyroid and things like that. And then I started sweating.
That's a fundamental process of toxin removal from the body and controlling your internal thermal regulation for yourself, right? And you have, a lot of people have hyperhidrosis. They have, especially on the hands, or too much sweating. A lot of times I see too much sweating in somebody who has, they're usually very sympathetic dominant driven in that as well. But so if you don't sweat a lot, your body has to find an alternate route for those to go out. And those are often compromised in people, because I say, you're allowed to have more than one problem. And what I found is, like I've said before, is that most of your lymphatics are located in the three places that we covered, skin, neck, and abdomen. Right? So I found when you start to do lymphatic work, particularly deep work in the case of the skin, because it's systemic. If you're not sweating anywhere, it's different. Mm-hmm. If you have patches where you're not sweating,
yeah,
that you can make a difference in the ability to sweat or not when you do lymphatics.
Yeah.
I usually find the culprit for that in the abdomen for sure. Usually about the space that I showed you between the navel and the bottom of the sternum.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is behind the sternum, the rib cage.
Okay.
Because that lymph duct runs along the thoracic spine, and that's where your sympathetic nervous system lives.
Ah, interesting. That's where I feel my little friend when I get it. Starts right around the bra line facing.
Yeah, so your sympathetic fibers run right along in between the vertebra with the ribs, hooking around.
Interesting.
And that's where it'll get you, because that usually... You know, I've had the herpes get me when I was really out. Mine branched out along a level from the spine around the ribs.
So that's like how shingles travels too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Travel. So it'll go usually through the sympathetic nerves and travel out. But so the sympathetic nerves are also can get kicked off because they're in an environment where the environment around those nerves, you know, is the cellular environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, let me see if I can say this without going too deep into it, but you have all around your body what they call nociceptors, which are nerves, the little threat detectors, and they kind of sense things, right? And then they're sending information through those nociceptors all the time up and through your spine into your brain to monitor a potential threat.
Okay. Right?
And Stephen Porges in his work calls it neuroception, the subconscious intake of information looking for threat all the time. Right? So what I want you to know is it's subconscious. You don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking it in. And it has to hit a certain point for it to register. It'll hit a boom. Then it rings a bell that it's a lot of threat here. And then boom, you get the signal. Right? It's like the stress bucket.
Yeah,
you can hold a lot in there. So what happens is that when these nociceptors are everywhere, they're definitely mm-hmm. around fascia. And when you have the fluid around the cells that are toxic,
mm-hmm.
the nociceptors are always getting signals of threat all the time. And if you have that in multiple places, your threshold for threat changes. So that's the person that all of a sudden I get one small input and then now I have chronic pain and I have excruciating pain because you've been building up that input for months and years and all it takes is one thing and then your nociceptors kick in and they stay on. So what I have to do is begin to decrease that. And I can't remember if I said this term before. It's actually called inflammatory interstitial stasis is the medical term for it.
Okay.
So inflammatory means that. Interstitial is the fluid between the cells.
Mm-hmm.
Stasis means stagnant. So the stagnant fluid causes inflammation, and the inflammation in the stagnant fluid feeds the nociceptors, which feeds the threat response, and then you get chronic pain.
Wow. That's and probably low tolerance for pain, I would imagine.
That's what it is. So it's the tolerance for when you ring that bell. Like, it's either on or it's off.
Yeah.
It's on or it's off. And then here's the thing. When you have the nociceptors going into the part of the spinal cord, so the dorsal horn, it becomes hypersensitive. So because it's getting bombarded so much all the time below the radar.
Yeah.
So when it sets off, all I got to do is say boo to you. And then something hurts.
Right?
So what I'm saying, what I want to try to do is bring that stuff that sounded complicated back to one simple thing. You have to try to get the fluid around the cells less toxic. And you do that through not working with the nerves, a little bit. You got to work with your nervous system, but I need to get the fluids out and fluids in. Then when I do that, because the nerve needs those fluids too. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm trying to change the nerve, that's nice, but the nerve also needs nutrients in and waste out. And you'll find that with why lymph work works so well is because I have a person that's got, say, pain, a chronic pain down in their ankle, right? But the flow to the ankle is coming all the way from the abdomen. So you may have a break, a block of the flow that needs to get to that point anywhere down to the ankle. So if I just work on your ankle, that ain't good because I'm only working one spot. I'm only working where it hurts. And that's what stop chasing pain means.
Okay.
It means treat pain. It doesn't mean chase it. You have to understand, you know, what the body's trying to do. When you injure your ankle, it's trying to heal it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to ask the same damn question. What does that ankle cell need to heal itself? And you're going to say nutrients in and waste out. And then I'm going to say, okay, well now where does that take you? And then you better say lymph flow and blood flow. It makes sense.
It does. It's in my brain now. This is brilliant. It really is. I mean, I did not expect to have so many areas of, you know, questions about inflammation and disease and pain just like be answered and come back to this. You know, I just did not expect that. That's incredible.
That's a fundamental for sure. That's why it's my purpose in life. It's where I start with everything to at least, like I said, check that box. And
yeah,
whenever I teach this stuff, I always say lymph always comes first, no matter what, to assess it or treat it. And here's the beautiful thing about when I teach this stuff, when you assess the lymph, the way I teach it to you, you also treat it at the same time.
You can start right away. As you're learning it, you can start right away.
Yeah. And plus people ask me, I mean, you know, do I have to be a medical professional? I said, no. I said, everybody has a God-given right to release your own lymph nodes. You know, like it's a part of your body. You need to understand it. Right. And mm-hmm. it's just like you would massage and rub any part of your body that might be tight or tender. I'm just going to show you the best sequence in order to do that in. Now, yeah. The sicker you are, the more you're probably going to want to consult with a professional.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm trying to tell you is you may have professionals that have no freaking idea about the lymph. You do. And you're probably going to struggle to find one. Mm-hmm. And when you find one, I don't know how they're going to do it. All right. But
yeah.
It's just, you can't change something until you become aware of it. And now that you're aware of it, you can start to go down the rabbit hole on the lymph. I mean, I've got a ton of it, you know, and that you can see. And then I teach everybody to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody can do this system. You don't have to be a healthcare professional to stimulate these points. And
right.
You can do it you should do it every single day, depending on how sick you are and your detox reaction. It can be, honestly, I've been doing this stuff long enough and I get messages from people every single day that are just heartfelt messages. And I mean, it touches me every time. And they say, I just want to say thank you because one, I never knew about this stuff. I never knew. And they're blown away about the changes that it made for such a simple intervention.
Yeah.
But it seems simple, but it's not. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening with the things that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
With the stuff that we went over, you're starting to grasp it, you know, because they're like, Doc, you're telling me if I just rub and I slap here, that's going to do anything? Well, after my course, you're going to know the answer to that question. That, yeah, it's going to do everything. When you're trying to get better, everything can work for someone. But you can't just indiscriminately start throwing darts at a board and touch and just start doing things wherever you want on the body because it feels good.
Yeah.
There has to be a strategy to what you're doing. And strategy comes first. Tactics come a distant second. If you have the wrong strategy, no tactic you throw at is going to work.
That's good. That's wise. And then one last thing came into my head. Of course, in the group, so many women ask about underarm lymph. And I too have a swollen lymph on the right side for the last like 3 years. And I don't freak out about it because it swells and goes down and swells and goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But they do get that a lot, especially once they get into perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah, right. That's a good. So it's important to remember that lymph is supposed to get swollen. I mean, you know, that's its job. It gets swollen to try to kill things and protect things. But here's the thing, it's not supposed to stay that way.
Okay.
Then, because it comes up, you get puffy, and you're like, oh, I'm all better, right? And that can absolutely change based on your hormone cycle, for sure. You know, in relationship to edema, swelling, inflammation, blood flow everywhere in the body. But most women will take a hit in that breast tissue because one, that's the kind of powerhouse location for the cancer, right? That they get with the breast. And you have a lot of lymph in that what's called the pectoral / axillary region. And you have more so because of the breast tissue and the adipose tissue that are in the breast. But I always tell people the same thing. Where is the breast tissue going to drain to? It's going to drain to the collarbone. It also, because the body has a way of rerouting lymph when there may be lymph nodes that were removed or obstructions, it'll send it someplace else to try to get rid of it. It won't be as efficient, but it's going to at least try to lessen the burden. So with the pec, there's a couple of things that I tell people that might help. If the pec has a lot of issues, when the brain, the lymph will try to send it to the same side hip groin, it'll send it low down there. It's called a watershed pattern. So right pec would try to drain towards the right inguinal crease of the groin. Okay. So sometimes massaging down there helps the axillary nodes feel a little bit better, right? And then it'll also try to send it to the opposite side, axillary, opposite side. But in order to do that, it has to hit the thing in the center. So one of the places that very few people ever check is the sternum itself. So the sternum should never, ever be puffy, tender, or swollen. If it is, you have blocked lymph that's deep. Rubbing and massaging around the sternum and in between the spaces where the ribs attach to the sternum,
okay,
or where lymph nodes sit. So if you're blocked at the sternum or you're blocked between the ribs at the sternum, you'll be blocked in the armpit.
Interesting.
You understand?
Wow. Yeah.
So if for the women that are listening, don't just massage your armpit, but you can, but do your neck first. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
Your collarbone first.
Mm-hmm.
But start to pay a little bit of attention to the sternum and the ribs.
Okay.
Right? And you can go down into the crease of the groin. And remember the little thing I told you about putting a little warm pack on your abdomen?
Mm-hmm.
Try to put a little warm pack on your sternum. And you might feel everything just start to let down. And that's your heart chakra too.
Ooh. So
you'll probably feel there's a lot of fascia there, and you'll probably feel from the warmth and that right there, a sense of a shield where you feel a little bit less stress come on in and into your body that way.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like when you rock a baby and you put your hand on their chest like that, you know, and it's like just this soothing, put you to sleep thing, because there's just something about that heart chakra that really takes on a lot of stress, right? And we protect it. We fold in, we hunch over, we protect it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I usually tell people to do is to take a hand and put one over your heart, put one on your abdomen. You close your eyes, you breathe in and out through your nose. And then you say to yourself, my body's doing the best it can with what it's got in the moment it's in to heal and to protect me. I'm safe, I'm okay, and I'm loved. You do that every single day, you're going to feel pretty good.
On that note, you have been tremendous. I so appreciate you.
Thank you very much. It was a lot of fun. I think we hit the flow state where time's kind of stood still.
It sure did. Okay. How good was that? Could you hear my jaw hit the floor like 10 different times, especially when he said like no hormones can get to where they need to go and do what they need to do without proper lymphatic drainage. Ah, that completely blew my mind. I just think about, you know, yeah, I'm active. I'm definitely active.
But I'm also stagnant a lot, you know, like I'm literally laying down doing this recording. And, you know, when I sit and edit and do all my work, all the things I do, I'm in front of a computer and I'm just sitting there, you know. And then when I do, when I am active, I walk. But like he said in the episode, you know, sometimes just repetitive movement of the same things you've always done can oftentimes just work the same lymphatic points, and you're meanwhile neglecting other points. And so, you know, working and doing other types of movement is a really good idea. And I think of all the different ways that poor lymphatic drainage shows up in our bodies. And of course he touched on a lot of it, but I thought of some afterwards, like floaters in the eyes, right? Who has floaters in the eyes? That can easily be lymphatic issues. How about a pinch an inch, right? You pinch an inch of fat and it hurts to pinch the inch. I mean, you don't want to grab an inch and squeeze it really hard, but just pinching an inch of fat. And those of you who can pinch an inch and don't feel any pain, don't get it. And that's good for you. But those of you who know exactly what I'm talking about, when you pinch an inch from your thigh or your belly, or you like run your fingers between your ribs, you know, how you can find points that are really tender. I remember once my mom, when I was young, I was in high school, and she used to get these incredible knots in her back. And I would go to town on them. She'd be like, just stick your elbow in it and just try to like bust it. Like she hated them. They were so painful for her. But I learned one day that I could move it, right? I could move it all the way down her back. Like I could move it all the way to her side, these little knots. And she told her doctor about it. And he's like, that's impossible. You're just, you know, that's not what happened at all. And it was happening, as she had these pockets of lymphatic fluid that were just stagnant in certain areas, and they would ache, and I would push them around and try to get rid of them. And I was pushing this lymphatic fluid, and to the point that it would leave like trails of bruises along her back and her legs. And that's incredible. You know, I mean, we just called them aliens. She would be like, I think I have another alien in my leg or my back. And then I would like move it around and stuff. And that's what it was. And there's so many other, like tender scalp, you know, tender headed, when someone's really tender headed, that can be poor lymphatic drainage. Neck tension, scalp tension, painful ears, like when you pull on your ears and it's just like, it feels really good, but it's also really, tight and tense. Oh, there's so many things I can think of that are caused by poor lymphatic drainage. And so I just want to encourage you to look in the show notes, because if this is your first time hearing about Dr. Perry, well, congratulations. Welcome to the club, because he is just super popular, and he has all of these training videos, and you can subscribe to his website and you can take these different classes, and he'll teach you how to do self palpation and things, and move certain types of lymph, depending on the focus. You know, it can be the tongue, it can be the jaw. He just goes through all these different incredible methods of moving lymph. He's probably the world's expert in this field. So please take advantage of all his resources. And and thank you for joining us. And don't forget about my coupon code for the Dutch dried urine in-home comprehensive test for hormones, to be able to check out not just your levels, but what you're doing with your hormones. Are you doing naughty things with them, or are you doing healthy things with them? And how can we change that if you're doing naughty things with them? We can do some lymph. You can better believe I'm going to start putting some lymph recommendations when people sign up to do the Dutch with me, to start to add different types of lymph concepts, lymph drainage concepts in their programs. So yeah, sign up for the Dutch and use the coupon code ED25 and get $25 towards your test. All right, thanks for joining us. I hope you loved this episode as much as I did. Woo!